Third and final hour here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam Vingan in for Robbie today, Michelle Knezovic, and as we do every Friday at 8 a.m., very happy to welcome in our friend TD Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation, covers the Titans and the league. TD, how the heck are you today, my friend?
Hey, how's it going? Good morning.
Are you in somewhat, I guess, football morning right now, TD, because we just saw our last real game for a long time, or are you just energized to dig in on the draft prospects, which I know you've already been doing after going to the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, it's really time to move on to the next phase, but you do have the XFL starting this weekend, but it's excited about being able to dig into some of these draft prospects. And we got the HBCU Combine coming up on Monday. I'll be down there for that, so looking forward to that as well.
And where is that?
That's in New Orleans. It's at the Saints facility.
Okay, cool. So right now, off the top of your head, I don't know, 3-4 players who have jumped out to you as players of particular interest, potentially, you know, to the Titans at 11.
Yeah, at 11, players of interest. I mean, there's a few that you could go to. Broderick, I'm going to go to Paris Johnson Jr. He's a guy out of Ohio State, you know, the left tackle. He's someone, I think you look at Skoronski out of Northwestern. That's another one. Broderick Jones out of Georgia. Those are three offensive linemen I think would be ideal.
Teron, elsewhere in the AFC South recently, the Indianapolis Colts, after having a coaching search that lasted how long? Several months, it felt like?
Years.
Years, perhaps. They settled on, well, not settled, because they seem so happy to have Shane Steichen as their new head coach. I'm curious about what you think of that hire and how you think that impacts the Colts and what Steichen's first order of business is to get that team back on track.
Yeah, I think when you look at Steichen, he's a guy who quarterbacks say they love working with him. So, Phillip Rivers, he came out and he raved about him. So I think that's really where the help is going to be. It's an ideal situation for them getting a young quarterback and having somebody who can help bring him along. So I think that's how it's going to work with them. I want to see because, I mean, look, this is a team that it's not like they're going from an offensive coach to a defensive coach. It's been that way, you know, offensive with Frank Reich. It's going to be, you know, all about taking a young quarterback and bringing him along as opposed to this plug-and-play thing that they've played over the last few years.
Yeah, no doubt. It seems pretty clear, you know, that TD, that two of the three, well, you know, the Jags, of course, already have their guy. But the other two AFC South teams are going to probably have, you know, their guy moving forward after this draft, whether it be, you know, with the Texans, are they going to go with Bryce Young? Is someone going to try to move up to one to get him? Would it be Stroud or Levis potentially, you know, for the Colts? But regardless, it looks like the Titans are probably going to be going to be sitting with Ryan Tannehill next year, and the other three AFC South teams will sort of have their long-term answer at quarterback. Do you have any – and I know we've talked a ton already. I mean, the offseason is so much about quarterbacks, but do you have any different feel at all just for the quarterback picture? Rodgers, as he's in his darkness retreat, Carr, I think we've talked about that. Like, I don't see why Carr is an upgrade over Tannehill, or the idea of – digging in on these prospects right now and seeing if maybe one of them is who you believe could be your guy and going that route. Maybe even like a Chiefs-like model from 2017 when they take Patrick Mahomes at 10 and Alex Smith has that last year and lets Mahomes sit for a year.
Yeah, you know, C.J. Stroud is a really interesting prospect. I like what he's able to do. You know, he has the accuracy. I think he's probably the most precise out of all of these quarterbacks. And he's someone that, you know, they may have to move up a bit to get, but I think he would be a good pick. A lot of people are looking at Will Levis as a guy that they feel will be one of the top options. And I get it. because when you watch him, you know, there's a couple throws I've seen him make, like 70 yards in the air, flick of the wrist, and it's in the end zone. And that's very attractive. But I would honestly just stay put. I don't know that I would move up to get any of these guys. I think next year is when you look at really trying to move up. You know, Caleb Williams is a guy I really like. Drake May is intriguing as well. So that's kind of what I would keep an eye on next year. Rodgers, I mean, you got to give up a couple firsts to get him. You do that, and you also got to take on that contract too. So I think everything falls in line for Tannehill to be the guy.
I wasn't able to listen to much of the TD Power Hour. Did Stillman throw his goofy Chad Brinker thing at you that they hired Chad Brinker to get intel on Aaron Rodgers?
No, he didn't. What he threw in there was that the Jets hired Todd Downing to get Ryan Tannehill. So I had to hit him with the Lee Corso, man. Not so fast, my friend.
I can't believe you went through an hour and he didn't. He must realize that the Brinker thing is dumb. I'm actually proud of him for that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you have one, Bing?
I was just curious for TD's opinion on, you mentioned Todd Downing being hired by the New York Jets. Keith Carter also hired by the New York Jets as well. What do you make of that dynamic, them both leaving Tennessee or being let go in Tennessee and then both ending up on the same team in New York?
Yeah, you know, that's the NFL, man. Coaches are recycled all the time. I'm actually really happy for Todd Downing, to be honest with you. I'm glad he was able to, you know, not exactly land fully on his feet, but still, you know, be able to bounce back and get a position, you know. So I'm happy for him for that. He's not as bad of a coach as people make him out to be. If you look, you know, obviously there were some egregious play calls, but at the same time, there were some where it was there, but it just wasn't executed. So you also got to look at, I mean, this guy got a pretty bad hand the last couple years, right? You lose Derrick Henry for 9 games, and then you lose Taylor Lewan for 15, and then on top of that, all the other injuries that they were dealing with on the offensive line. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying he's not as bad as he's made out to be, so I'm happy for that. And Keith Carter, you know, he's another coach that he's an acquired taste, and Taylor Lewan and some of the other players have said that. But, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with those guys up there with the Jets.
No. Yeah, I'm with you on Downing, and I mean that'll get the text line popping, I'm sure. But you know, it gets exaggerated, and everybody wants to be able to, you know, to isolate and say this is whose fault it was. But I still think the roster was a much bigger issue last year. So TD, on the coaching staff front, interesting to me that, you know, of course you have Justin Outen coming in to be running backs coach, run game coordinator. Tony Duzio is the tight end. You have Charles London in as quarterback's coach and pass game coordinator. There's the word coordinator just all over NFL coaching staffs now. But you got two guys there in Outen and London who have had OC interest around this league, who could potentially be, you know, guys waiting in the wings if a Tim Kelly does well and moves on. And then you have Pat O'Hara and Luke Steckel. I mean, basically, to me, you know, getting demotions but still here. I'm sure they're not getting less pay. So I look at this as Amy Adams Strunk really investing in this staff. Yeah. What do you think the impact of that is?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. It's a high investment in the staff. And, I mean, Luke Steckel, we remember he interviewed for the Chargers OC job. So you have a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And I think this is just further accentuating the collaboration side of things that they're looking to have. And I've said it before, it reminds me of the situation with the Eagles where they had a bunch of guys as well. You had John DeFilippo, who was a quarterback coach. He had OC experience. Obviously, Frank Reich was the OC. He had Press Taylor. You had Mike Groh. These guys all were up-and-coming coaches, and they were each in charge with different things. So you look at Philly Special, the fake that they did on 4th-and-1 to get Nick Foles the touchdown, that was something that Press Taylor went and grabbed because it was his job to go find trick plays. That was his job. So that's what he did. And look at how it benefited. So a collaboration can be good, and I that's how I look at it, honestly.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if everybody's on the same page, it's just more brain power, right? I mean, that's how it should work. It should just help you. All right, last thing for you, TD. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation. Super Bowl recap. Three things, okay? First of all, I hated the last call. Thought it was ticky-tack, and I didn't want the game to end on that. Your thoughts on that? What we take away from the team with the best quarterback winning against maybe the best team with a really good quarterback, who, by the way, I thought might have been better that night than Mahomes in a lot of the game. But what's the takeaway in terms of, big picture in this league? And finally, where do you rank Rihanna's halftime performance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that call was – it was – you look and you watch the play, you look in the O-line, there's illegal hands to the face, but that was kind of overlooked. So it was disappointing to see that call and not have the other one at the same time. But, I mean, holding is holding. You know, you can't hold. And that whether or not that pass was catchable is irrelevant because with holding, that's not something that you put into the picture. It was a great game, though. I mean, you look both sides. They did some really great things. I wish the field was in better shape so I could really see those Eagles pass rushers get after it. But Jalen Hurts, man, a few years ago, we had him on talking with TD, and I remember talking with some of the hosts about him being a legit quarterback, and they told me I was crazy. But you see that this guy is – his performance was outstanding. Triple threat, so it was great to see him be able to do that. To have the mindset to be able to take them back on scoring drives after giving up the touchdown, an unforced error, and then you turn around and you take them on a touchdown drive. And then you, after the Chiefs scored to go ahead, take them on another one. And you look at the running, three touchdowns in the game, and then 300 yards passing. He showed that he's legit. Now, as far as Rihanna's performance, I enjoyed it. I still put Prince. I put him above that. I also, you got to put the one from last year with Dre and 50 Cent and Mary J. and Kendrick and all those. That's probably the best ever, in my opinion. But it was good. I couldn't fully listen to it because I was doing ESPN Radio, but I definitely got the visuals. I loved how everything was.
There we go, TD. I got to admit, man, I think Prince is number one. But I did love last year's, too. Last year's was pretty great. All right, TD, Teron Davenport, as always, thanks so much, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, for sure. Appreciate you guys.
All right, Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation. When we come back, we will react to a bit of what he said. Actually, I do need Vingan's halftime ranking as well. And a little bit more on the Titans coaching situation and how maybe that can benefit them next year. Robbie and Rex showed 102.5, 106.3 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Video streaming brought to you by Superbuck here on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley. Michelle Knezovic running the show as always. And just talked to Teron Davenport. So we got some reaction, Adam, and I do want to get to definitely some skepticism about the coaching changes, what they mean. Jeff from Aaron, Tennessee. I'm going to actually read two texts that he sent today. One is the latest. The Titans can make all the coaching changes they want. Long as Ryan Tannehill's a quarterback, it's going to be another mediocre season. Just have to find somebody else to watch. He also said earlier, Joe is just as blind about John Hines as he is about Tannehill.
Oh.
We're putting John Hines and Ryan Tannehill together. Let me ask you, Jeff, you can text back on this. Were you like Malik Willis should replace Tannehill this year? Were you one of those on Titans Facebook? Yeah, I'm not saying Ryan Tannehill's a great quarterback. Ryan Tannehill has done more than mediocre in his time with the Titans, though. So, I mean, the best Titans football since the great era under Steve McNair was with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. And, yes, it was built around Derrick Henry at running back. But, I mean, it's absolutely true that I lost trust. I think a lot of people did when he threw three picks to lose the Bengals game. Also, it's true that he has played a lot of good football. And this last year. I was impressed with Tannehill's performance given the circumstances, but you're probably looking at another year of Ryan Tannehill, so you're probably going to have to settle in and get used to that idea.
Yeah, and you look at what's happening around the league in terms of quarterback movement, and I know Aaron Rodgers is tripping on ayahuasca in some closet somewhere, you know, trying to figure out what to do with his life. But, you know, unless you can land someone like that, you know, there, I don't see any other quarterback on the market, whether it be a free agent or a potential trade, that is, you know, a significant improvement over Ryan Tannehill. I know that the Raiders just released Derek Carr, and now he gets a head start on potentially, I mean, well, he's going to find a new place to play. He gets a head start on finding a new team, but I don't see, I don't think Derek Carr is that much better of a quarterback than Ryan Tannehill. Like, I
don't think he's better.
You think Tannehill is better than Carr?
I mean, I think they're, I think they're
pretty much equal, I would say. You know,
Carr is younger.
Yes. So, yeah, I don't really see, you know, would you rather have Jimmy Garoppolo than Ryan Tannehill?
Good Lord, no.
Like, you know, I don't know who else is out there.
It's the rookie scenario. I mean, that's right. To me, that's what it is.
But moving up in the draft and picking one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Richardson may be there, you know, and some people.
How do you feel about him?
Well, yeah, I do put, like, high value in what I've seen with my own two eyes, you know, maybe just because there's something to that, right? Mm-hmm. Like so I've always kind of gone that way. And what I saw with my own two eyes this fall was a first round quarterback really tearing up the Vols in Neyland Stadium and keeping Florida in that game. He was fantastic. Now, I watched enough of him on TV this year where I was like, what is happening with this guy? I mean, he's not – I don't think he's ready to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. I think his ceiling may be as high as anybody in this draft. You know, I mean, I would take Bryce Young. If I have my pick of all the quarterbacks in this draft, it's easy. It's a quick answer, Bryce Young. But I do worry about him holding up physically. You don't worry about something like that with Anthony Richardson. I mean, he could be a force at some point. So it's like, to me, Richardson is a great example of – if you believe that it's all going to come together for him, the ceiling's very high. Mm-hmm. Take him and you let him have a year, because he probably should play another year of college football.
Mm-hmm.
But look, if you're going to go in the first round, I think he will go somewhere in the first round. You go. So I think that's the only quarterback scenario realistically that alters just Tannehill as a starter. Jared from Spring Hill. So did Vrabel just stop collaborating last year or something, or never been a collaborator? Why are they flooding us with that word? Does he not play well with others? He hired Downing. Well, first of all, the collaboration was a word that TD brought into it last segment, but it is, I mean, that's the thing with this coaching staff. It's like there are more cooks in the kitchen, right? So it's, I think it's a good thing to, even though your OC was internal, and so people don't like that, and he has a history of Vrabel. He is a guy who's had some success as OC. But regardless, the hires, you know, London and Outen are hires of, like, OC candidates around the NFL who are now here. And basically some guys have been bumped down in the staff. There's just more people who are going to have a say. That doesn't necessarily mean it's good, but if you do actually collaborate, then that can be a positive for you. But as far as the collaborate, that word has mostly been thrown up by the Titans in terms of Rand Carthon,
yes,
and Mike
Vrabel.
Yes, that's
what I was about to say. Right? I feel like that was more of a John Robinson, Mike Vrabel thing, the collaboration versus the coaching staff.
And I take some of that. First of all, I think some of that is because, I mean, Vrabel, I do think, is going to have final say on things. And so that's the answer to the question of who has it. It's, you know, it's going to be a collaboration. I mean, they genuinely do need to have a collaboration. Also, I do take it to some extent as a comment on how things went in the later stages with John Robinson and Mike Vrabel. And look, John Robinson, on his own, made some choices Mike Vrabel didn't agree with, and that went very poorly. So that to me is why that word is being thrown all over the place.
Yeah, and how many of these coaching hires, other than, you know, Tim Kelly being promoted from within, you know, have ties to Vrabel. None, right? I mean, or how many of these recent coaching hires have some sort of tie to Vrabel?
Well, Charles London does. Okay. They were in Houston together. So there is – but Justin Outten does not. Now, he – it's interesting because – yeah, I don't think Matt LaFleur is going to go down as like Mike Vrabel's favorite, you know, coordinator or assistant coach in the 1 year they were together. And every time Vrabel talks about coaches who are out looking for a job rather than being focused on their work and stuff, I'm like, so is he just talking about LaFleur here? But this is a LaFleur guy out, and he, you know, was with him in Atlanta with Kyle Shanahan, and then. You know, when LaFleur gets the job with Green Bay, he hires Outten to come in with him and be his tight ends coach. So this is there's a link, but it's interesting because I don't think of like LaFleur and Vrabel as really tight.
Yeah.
You know, even though they are technically, I mean, LaFleur is part of the Vrabel tree. So, but that is someone who he has not worked with before. That's a new, and I understand like Broncos fans would be like, did you watch our offense this year? But, you know. He was not a play caller. He's not a play caller until Nathaniel Hackett got fired, you know, at the end of that year. Mm-hmm. So, but for them, again, to me, it's a little bit too much of that is made of that, in my opinion. You're not, you know, you're hiring people that you trust, but also that you believe are good because you've seen them work. You've worked with them. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you go around to any of these coaches in the NFL, there's a lot of that on their staffs. At some point, you lose people if you have success and you have to go outside. You have to rely on the word of others and things like that. And you should be willing to go out and look for fresh ideas and things like that. Vrabel made a big deal of how he did that when he hired Tim Kelly. There was not much reporting on, you know, actual interviews. So I don't know if it was absolutely a foregone conclusion or not with Tim Kelly. But I think a little bit too much is made of like Vrabel and his buddies as opposed to Vrabel hiring people he thinks are good. Todd Downing, I think, was a mistake by Vrabel, and that's fair to point out.
I mean, naturally, when you're in a position where you can make choices about personnel, you're going to rely on people that you've worked with or know well. I mean, that happens in all walks of life. It's not just in sports. So, yeah, I mean, I think the idea of, you know, Vrabel, you know, not having you know, outside voices, quote unquote. I agree with you. Might be a bit overblown, but you know, I think I am, and this is not this related to the coaching, but I am very interested to see how the relationship works with him and Rand Carthon, just because it feels like, you know, the Titans went out of their way to say these guys are going to work so well together, like peanut butter and chocolate, two great tastes that taste great together. While they made it seem like John Robinson and Mike Vrabel were like oil and water.
Yeah, and that's not true, you know. But look, A.J. Brown, I think Vrabel made it very clear what he thought about that before that night. And we've seen how damaging that move was. All right, we come back. There were so many thoughts on the Preds. We are going to revisit that and continue to in the idea of solutions here moving forward, as it sounds like the Preds are getting closer to being sellers. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Hey, did you screw up Valentine's Day? Well, 102.5 The Game and Green Trees Company have your chance to make it up. Tune in to Chase and Michelle today for your last chance to win tickets to see Adam Sandler at Bridgestone Arena tonight, courtesy of Green Trees Company in Hendersonville. Also, Dave Matthews Band, I will be there one way or the other. I will be there May 26th at Bridgestone. Third caller. Tickets to Dave Matthews Band.
And the fourth caller can hear me sing to them, Dave Matthews, instead. By not winning the tickets, I'll sing Dave Matthews to you.
What's your favorite Dave Matthews song?
I don't know. They all sound the same.
I love Sweet Annie.
Absolute hater. Nice. Deep cut. I'm impressed, Michelle. Okay. Well, Vingan, an absolute hater of Dave Matthews, but a lover of hockey. And you've given us a lot of Preds analysis today. Now, I have on Twitter here, Dalton D. Glenn yelling at me about how I should rant about the ridiculously loud and awful music in Bridgestone. I don't know about that. You do sound like an old man. The bass is ridiculous. Friends in Low Places doesn't need a dubstep remake. Okay, I can kind of.
I did hear that last night, and I was like, Am I hearing this right?
Yeah, I can kind of get with you on that one. But for the most part, you know, again, my only real problem is either Glorious Domination or Scott Stapp. You get rid of those things, we're good.
You know how I feel about your Scott Stapp slander.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. It's not, you know, it's not, I'm not softening with my age on that one. It still makes my ears bleed just like it always did. Dalton also says, getting rid of UC would be the dumbest thing we could possibly do. We saw it happen when we didn't have him last year. If you get rid of him, you might as well blow up the entire team anyway.
That's the point.
Right. I mean, that's right, Dalton. That's the thing we're talking about. We're talking about a rebuild. I mean, we're talking about how can you get assets, get younger, give yourself a chance to, you know, basically, you know, load up with more futures. And, yeah, look, ideally, if you could have UC Saros and Yaroslav Askarov long-term as a goalie tandem, my goodness, that would be awfully good. But this team is too deficient elsewhere. And what wins in the NHL? Hey, it's great to have a Vasilevsky, okay? But like you just said earlier on the show, Vingan, Darcy Kuemper also just won a cup. It's offense that wins championships in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Agree, disagree?
It's offense?
Yeah, I mean, it's high-level, dominant.
Yeah, I mean, I think skaters. When the Los Angeles Kings won their two Stanley Cups in 2012 and 2014, those were defensive-minded teams with an elite goaltender in Jonathan Quick. Like, I think they were one of the worst offensive teams in the league, at least one of those years, maybe both, but they were fantastic defensively.
That was 9 years ago, though.
Yes, right. Like, look at, like, Colorado last season proved what it takes to win, you know, the Stanley Cup, which is you do not need elite goaltending to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, Kuemper was fine in the postseason, but I would say he was about average. He wasn't, you know, posting a .940 save percentage or anything like that in the postseason last year. But as we saw firsthand with the Predators in the first round, the Avalanche just, you know, were domineering offensively. So Darcy Kuemper had a .257 goals against average and .902 save percentage and 16 starts in the postseason, and they still won the Stanley Cup. Like, you don't need, I mean, it's like you said, it's great to have a Vasilevsky or a Shesterkin or someone like that, you know, to you know, even though Shesterkin hasn't won the Stanley Cup, but, you know, you a goalie of that caliber to win, it helps, absolutely. But the Avalanche proved last season that you do not need that to win if you have an offense that can just railroad teams.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of like we go to the Super Bowl discussion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you won with Mahomes, so you could say, so that's the only way you can win is by having, you know, that guy at quarterback, which, of course, is very hard to do, and very few teams have that guy. I mean, look, I watch that game and I say, yeah, one or two things goes the other way, including like Jalen Hurts just dropping the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying, see, you don't need that guy. You win it with a great team around a good quarterback, right? So, I mean, I still think both things can be true. I think when you have that guy, you're more likely to keep knocking on the door. So I don't – like, how much of the credit for the Lightning championships do you give to Vasilevsky?
I mean, what's,
I mean,
that,
they're just great.
I mean,
all
what's
the way
that
around.
Guy's record and like, how many shutouts does that guy have in series clinching games? 5 or 6, which is an NHL record. I mean, he's amazing. But the thing about that team is that even if he wasn't amazing, they'd still probably win. When you have Stamkos and Kucherov and Hedman and, you know, that
point,
Point and Cirelli in that third line a couple of years ago of Goudreau and Coleman and Gord, like they're in, and Sergachev, like, look how many great players I'm naming other than Vasilevsky.
Right.
Like, he's great. And he played a huge role in that because no one could stop him. But even if he was slightly worse, they'd still probably win because They're just so deep.
I mean, I'd still say, like, there are different ways to do it. We may see, I mean, like, Montreal got there, right?
Right.
With
Carey Price.
Yeah, I mean, like.
During the bubble, right? No, that wasn't the bubble. Was it?
That was the
56-game season. It was the 56-game season.
It was 21.
Yeah, it was the Stars in the bubble. It was the Canadiens in the 56-game season.
So the reason I ask it, because what it, like, when we talk about what's the market, I mean, I still feel like there's plenty of teams out there that say, you know, if you added that guy and we could make it work, how many more wins here does that add? How much more of a chance does that give us in a tight series to have that guy in goal, right?
Right. Like I mentioned the Oilers earlier, and you know, Jack Campbell signed a big contract in the offseason coming over from Toronto, and he has not been good. And their other goalie, Stuart Skinner, who was actually an all-star, I think he was one of the all-stars that was voted in by the fans, but he was, you know, he's played well, you know, overall, but neither of them are the caliber of UC Saros now. You know, there's been a lot of reports that the Oilers are hot on Erik Karlsson, which would be interesting. Certainly won't help you defensively, like in terms of in your own end, but with the
he'll produce.
With the Oilers, you know, the best defense is a great offense, because if you have the puck, you don't have to defend. But if they were to add a goalie of UC Saros caliber to that lineup with Draisaitl and McDavid and Zach Hyman and Evander Kane, like, you know, I would have a hard time picking against the Oilers personally.
Can they make that work?
I mean, you would have to take some money back. You would probably be taking back a bad contract or two. But I remember asking David Poile at the end of last season, are you willing to take on bad contracts from other teams with your cap space in exchange for assets? And he said no. I think the Predators need to consider that heavily.
But that was then. When they had coming off a playoff appearance.
Right.
And he was obviously going in to add in the offseason, which he did. And this is now.
Yes.
Those ads somehow have led to a worse team. Not saying the ads have led to the worst team. You know, Niederreiter, I think McDonough has been solid for most of the season. Niederreiter was hot early, hasn't produced as much, but it's not their fault. But I'm just saying, on paper, that's why everybody picked them to not just get to the playoffs, but I think I picked them. Did I pick them second or third in the division? I mean, they're so – a year ago, how much talk did we hear from the Preds about expectations and how they exceeded them? Like, that is the opposite discussion now. But I'm sure it won't be brought up by them.
No, not at all. But, yeah, I think, as I said, if I'm looking at deadline moves that you can make that, you know, will not be as difficult as a potential Saros trade as we play armchair GM, I would move Dante Fabro, I would move Nino Niederreiter, and I would probably move Mattias Ekholm. Those are the three I can think off the top of my head. I can't imagine someone taking Duchene or Johansson. Granlund is not having a good season. He doesn't have a lot of value, in my opinion. So those are the three I would start with, personally.
See, and it's interesting, too, because if you make a move for Ekholm, if someone out there wants to make that deal, and certainly, I mean, Ekholm is the type of guy who, and this is why he was the most talked about Pred a couple years ago when we thought that they were headed toward a big sell before they went on this crazy run, which is right around this time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was
20. What'd you say? 27
they went
20 and one.
27-1, 2-0, not 27-1.
Right.
They went 27-28, 27-1.
Yeah,
if I recall correctly,
to get in the playoffs.
Yes,
which is exactly what they have to do right now.
Yes.
Basically,
I said earlier that they probably need to win somewhere between 18 and 20 of their final 30 games to make the playoffs.
Yeah, which I don't think they'll do. But again, at this time. 2 years ago, Ekholm was all we were talking about. What city? Where is he going to end up?
We're talking about Pekka-Rinne too, because I think that was his last season, right? We were talking about would Pekka-Rinne want to pull a Ray Bourque and go to a team and win a Stanley Cup, which obviously he didn't want to do and they didn't have to do. But Ekholm was, you know, I talked to him about it at the time. Like he knew his name was out there. He was prepared for it. He was preparing his family for it. It didn't happen. But he was aware of it.
The difference, of course, is now you're taking on Ekholm at 6.25 AAV for the next three seasons if you deal for him.
I think the Predators are going to need to start retaining salary, which, again, is not something they've ever done, but they probably need to start doing it. Like, if Ekholm at 3 years at 3 point something, I would, you know, if I'm a contending team,
absolutely.
I'm jumping all over that.
All over it.
Yeah.
So. Lots of interesting days ahead with the National Predators. I will say this, again, if they are able to turn around, and I'm not optimistic at all, I don't think it's going to happen, but if they are, think about the run, 27-1, and then they gave Carolina all they wanted in that series. So they had found a level of play. They have to somehow find a consistent level of play to do that. We just haven't seen it this year. It's hard to imagine it happening. But when we come back, we will finish with Call Your Shot Friday. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And it is that time. Call Your Shot Friday to close out the show here on Robbie and Rex Road. And vinging in for Robbie Stanley, but I'm going to read last week's shot, see how we did. Well, let's go with Robbie. Robbie said Ryan McDonagh will score at Philly. That did not happen.
Wrong.
He said the Vols will take down Alabama in overtime. They did not need overtime. They did take down Alabama. Chris Jones, no sacks and no pressures in the Super Bowl. And you know what? Did he get that right? He definitely got the no sacks.
I think he might have.
I'll look that up while you keep reading.
He must have. He had pressures. But I like the shot. And MVS, his buddy from Green Bay, will score a 35-yard-plus touchdown Super Bowl. That also didn't happen. Michelle, you got the long-term shot. SEC tournament won by Arkansas. So we're watching that one. Tennessee will beat Missouri by 10 or more. Buzzer beater loss. But on Wednesday, we'll lose to Alabama by 15 or more. Dominated them and won by 9. But at least, you know, they
were like opposite.
Each other. Just flip them around. A.J. Brown will be the leading receiver in the Super Bowl. He almost was. He had 6 for 96 and a touchdown. Devontae Smith had 100, I think.
Yeah, I think he was a little bit more.
And then Jalen Hurts will be the leading rusher in the Super Bowl. Actually, I think, didn't Pacheco have more than him?
Yeah, Pacheco, I would assume he had more.
Three touchdowns. He's still like, the spirit of the shot was good. My called shots, Vanderbilt will follow this went up by winning at Florida. Liam Robbins with a double-double and 5-plus blocks. I believe I got every damn thing right.
I think
you
did.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay, UT will beat Missouri and Alabama by a combined 25 points. Now, Preds will lose at Philadelphia, and Cole Smith will have the only goal. I did not have that right. That was the one good Preds outcome here since the All-Star break. And I said A.J. Brown will have a TD catch of 75 yards on the first possession he hit. It wasn't that long, but he did have a long TD catch. So kind of close-ish.
We did good-ish.
It wasn't bad. Compared to a lot of weeks, not bad. All right, Michelle, let's start with you. Call your shot.
Okay, I've got a couple today. First, I teased this in Best and Worst in Sports. A friend, Kevin Herter, he is going to be in the three-point contest. So I'm calling that Kevin wins a three-point contest for NBA All-Star Weekend, which is in, I think, Salt Lake City this year. So
yes.
Kevin wins that one. The Nashville Predators get shut out again at home by the Panthers tomorrow.
Wah, wah.
I know I need one of those little sound buttons. Okay.
That's
Kentucky
it?
Kentucky beats Tennessee. That's all I'm saying. I don't know by how many. The game is tomorrow at noon. No one tweet at me.
Mm-hmm.
No one talk to me till
Everybody
Monday.
Tweet and talk to Michelle.
I got thoughts on that.
I will mentally not be okay. Okay, and then finally to round it out, I've got Vanderbilt beats Auburn Saturday night, and Vanderbilt will not be playing on Wednesday of the SEC tournament.
Well, I think, I think there's a good chance of that.
I ran into Jim Wyatt at the golf or at a gas station. He's like, I'm just happy Vandy's not going to be playing on Wednesday.
I mean, the way they're going, especially if they win Saturday, they might be top four in the mm-hmm. get the double bye. They might not be playing until Friday at this point. So, Adam Vingan?
Okay.
Do you
well,
have some called shots for us?
One of mine is of the same of the is similar to Michelle, so I am going to call. Unfortunately for your friend Kevin Herter, I am going to say it's Dame time.
Oh.
In the 3-point contest, Damian Lillard will win the NBA 3-point contest, and Mac McClung will win the slam dunk contest. So I have Damian Lillard in the 3-point shootout. And Mac McClung in the slam dunk competition. A good field for the 3-point competition. Jason Tatum, Kevin Herter, Tyler Hero, Tyrese Halliburton, Buddy Hield, Damian Lillard. I believe Julius Randle is in it.
That's wild.
And Laurie Markkanen. So a good field there.
Give me Buddy Hield.
All right, Buddy Hield. So there we go. All different picks. I'm going to say for the Predators, I will say they lose tomorrow to Florida, who's playing very well. They've won 5 of 7. The Panthers have. They will lose to Florida at home tomorrow to go 0-4 at home since the All-Star break, but they will win in Minnesota. So they will beat, they will lose to the Panthers. I won't say a shutout like Michelle, but they will lose to the Panthers at home, but beat the Wild on the road.
Okay. All right.
Chase just called me a homer.
Oh, because you pick Kentucky?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you are a Kentucky homer. That's okay.
Yeah, but I don't cover them, so it's okay.
That's right. Well, I got a called shot. Tennessee will win at Kentucky.
Ah!
With no James playing, with no Phillips playing, no problem. Juros Plavšić, 15+.
I don't know why they don't use him more.
Yeah, I think it's a defensive thing. Adu was very good the other night, but man, when he gets on the block, he's tough to stop. Vanderbilt will beat Auburn tomorrow night in front of the best crowd in that building since 2019 when number one Tennessee came in and it went to overtime. Liam Robbins, 25, 10, and 5 blocks. So similar to the college basketball. He is absolutely on a heater. He is making himself money, and he's one of the best big men playing college basketball right now. The Phoenix Suns and Kevin Durant will lose in the first round of the playoffs. That's my called shot. Remember that now. Remember that now, folks. Or remember that then. And for the Preds, Matthias Ekholm will be traded by the deadline. Dante Fabbro will not be traded. So Ekholm out, Fabbro still here when it's all said and done.
Interesting.
Yeah. And one thing on that, if you think about it, like if they do move Ekholm, you could make the case that it's worth a qualifying offer, to keep Fabbro and Carrier, but we'll see. Nate says, I think the Vols beating Kentucky is more of a shot than Kentucky beating the Vols. What is the line on that, by the way?
I will look it up right now for you. Give me 1 second.
I don't know about that. I mean, I know Kentucky's at home, and Tennessee,
I think it's
has
a shot either way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting game, a good game. I like Tennessee. I do. John says if Kentucky wins, Robbie should have to eat an olive or maybe a plum. Has anybody, by the way, from my plum rant gotten into plums? Vinyan, do you like plums?
I don't eat plums. Like, I don't think I'm opposed to them, but I it's not something I eat.
I'm really trying to increase plum awareness, so I may have to, bring that up.
Okay.
Bring that up again. Final thoughts, Adam Vinyan, Nashville Predators. We've had a lot of conversation today. Jared Stillman, Preds fan from the time they got here, he says he is actively rooting against them to make the playoffs. Do you find this, I guess, acceptable for fans to root for their team to lose and not make the postseason when they have an opportunity to make a postseason?
I think that if fans truly believe that their team losing will be better for them in the long term, I have absolutely zero issue with Predators fans hoping that this team misses the playoffs.
Do you agree with that? Do you think it will be better for them in the long term?
Yes, I do.
Because you think that there will be actual significant changes?
Yes. I said at the end of last season that the Predators would not get better until they allowed themselves to get worse. And that's I stand by that.
All right. There we go. That's our show. Thanks so much, Adam Vinyan, Michelle Knezovic, and, of course, Chase and Michelle coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.